Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Kappa Kappa Psi Presents, the official podcast for Kappa Kappa Psi National Honorary Band Fraternity. I'm your editor and host, Ryan Smith. This week's episode will be a little different. This episode was recorded at National Convention in Grand Rapids back in July. It is the conversation between the NIB, National Intercollegiate Band, composer and conductor. The composer was Alex Shapiro, and the conductor was Dr. Cynthia Johnston Turner. This episode is mostly unedited and is recorded in front of a live audience. Occasionally, you will hear my voice to speak the questions from the audience, especially those ones that were not very audible. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing so far?
Good.
Good. How am I?
Good.
I'm excellent. I would say 10 out of 10. Yes. Thank you so much for asking. I'm really excited about this music hour because the process of a score created and then coming together is an elusive one. And it's not one that we get to experience firsthand too often, and it's not one that you get to sit and ask all the questions about how it came together and what was that process like. So as VP PR for Tau Beta Sigma, along with Tony Falcone, my name is Tanya Mitchell Spradley, by the way, we had this wonderful opportunity to work with these fabulous musicians in this creation of the piece Suspended, which was performed so beautifully last night by the National Intercollegiate Band. So to talk to you a little bit about this process, answer your questions. They've told me that it's okay to say it's a kind of an informal setting. Do ask questions.
Very.
Yes. Is composer and help me welcome Alex Shapiro and Cynthia Johnston Turner.
Yeah, before we begin, I've been asked to give you the raffle code.
If you stick around the entire time we're speaking, you might win a frozen turkey.
I don't know. The raffle code is, ready? G as in Gounod. N as in no. O as in old boy. W, R as in raffle. G-N-O, as if you were about to spell no, right?
No.
G-N-O-W-R. Good luck, everybody.
Good luck. We don't know what you win, but it's probably something very cool.
So. Yeah. Okay, any questions?
So seriously, we do want to make you feel, I always say this, I like these kinds of chats, because
yeah.
I feel like we're all in a very interestingly designed living room. Pretend we live in a mansion, and you're in the living room here, and the only thing lacking is we're not serving you drinks, unfortunately, but which we would, trust me. But I want you to feel like just really comfortable to start us off, ask some questions. How many of you happened to be at the concert last night? Good, all right.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming. So if any questions, whether it's, we want to talk a lot about the conducting process, the rehearsing process, we can talk about the technical process involved in all this kind of stuff, smoke and mirrors. So you want to start us off?
Yeah.
Okay.
The first audience member asked if they could talk about how this commission came about from its inception.
Sure. It started with an email in 2018. And those of you who are thinking of commissioning at some point in your careers, we need lead time. And this was beautiful. I got an email from a wonderful band director, Kyle Glazer, who was an outgoing vice president, I think, of Tau Beta Sigma or Kappa Kappa Psi, I forget which, right? And he had played my music and had suggested me for the next commission. This was 2018. And so I knew about this for a long time because only a fool would say, no, I don't want to do this, right? Only a fool would say, I don't want to write for the NIB. And so I had that in the back of my mind while I was working on other pieces. I actually started writing the piece. A composer, we might be writing another piece, but the back of your mind, your subconscious is always working on a lot of different things. things, right? Simultaneously. So I'm thinking about this piece as I'm finishing some other pieces. I actively started writing in October of 2019. It all runs together. 2020.
I know, I was 38 before the pandemic.
Really? Now I'm not. But that was the timeline. You know, it was a very nice advance timeline. And the piece took me about 9 months to write. And I was doing a lot of other things at the same time, too. When did you
I don't know when I got the lovely invitation email. A year ago, maybe? A year and a half ago? Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that the composer was contacted before the conductor, but I don't know in terms of the process, the inner workings of all of it, whether they decided, well, here would be an interesting match or not. I have no idea how that worked, but it certainly is an interesting match and pretty fabulous, if I do say so.
When I found out that Dr. Turner was the conductor of this, my head exploded with joy, because I will tell you a story that when the first time, and she and I didn't, by the way, that little background, I adore this woman. I've always adored her from afar. I've watched her do her thing, and I have great respect for her over this year during the pandemic. We've done Zooms together.
Yes.
Right? So we've had some really cool, heartfelt conversations in the form of webinars and things like that. We've been on committees for CBDNA together back when COVID started. We helped form a report to help the field about safety measures and creative ways of dealing with education, music education, when everything just shut down automatically. Remember that a year and a half ago. So anyway, so we knew each other from afar. To my knowledge, she had never conducted a piece of mine. I think I did something. But we had never collaborated. And so the first time that I remember meeting was about 7 years ago. I was giving a clinic on electroacoustic music at Midwest. Oh. And in this really big ballroom. And I was in there early to set up with my colleagues. And there in the front row in this otherwise empty 500-seat place, there was this woman in, I think you were wearing white. I don't know why I remember this. And I look at her closely, and my first thought is, ooh, this is Cynthia Johnson Turner. Wow, I want to say hi. Because, you know, rock star, as far as I'm concerned, she's a rock star. And then I looked closer, and here's a punchline. Guess what? She was wearing Google Glass.
You don't know what Google Glass is.
Oh, you don't know what Google Glass is.
Yeah.
You do.
Okay. You do. Some of you do. Others are like, Google what?
Yeah. So this is...
I'll tell you. Yeah. You finish the story.
Okay. She'll tell you what it is. She'll describe it. It's very cool. But it is, I thought, oh my gosh, kindred spirit. Here is somebody who is a wonderful musician and gets technology and is immersing herself in the latest and greatest and new. Google Glass is... Go ahead.
Yeah, Google Glass. So give me a second. I'm going to say 2008. Something like that. Google, very smart marketers, right? They put something on Twitter and lots of other social media that said, if I had glass, the hashtag was if I had glass. And they had this very cool video that was taken of a couple of guys, I think, wearing Google Glass, which is essentially wearing your phone on your face.
It's basically simple frame, like a half wireless frame.
Yeah, and then a screen here. And they're jumping out of an airplane with the Google Glass on, and they're filming it. This is just like putting GoPro on your head. In fact, my husband kept saying, I don't get it, just get a GoPro. Anyway, and it was hashtag if I had glass, and these are incredible implications for conducting, right? I mean, I could project the score in the glass, and I could look through the score to the ensemble. Won't that be cool? Funny story, that wasn't cool. They also had if you tap behind your ear, there's a bone behind your ear, and that's how, there was no speaker per se. That's how it managed. It wasn't in your ear, like we're now used to wearing. Google made a calculated risk that people won't want to put stuff in their ears. Oops, that didn't work out. So they had this thing happening here. What a cool way to teach metronome. What an interesting way to get time into conductors, a young conductor's body. Anyway, we developed all these. So hashtag if I had glass, And I said all these things. I would do this. We would project concerts from Costa Rica back to Cornell, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, one of them got Google's attention and said, congratulations, you're a Google Glass Explorer. That'll be $1,000. Right? Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. Exactly. I'd do it again. Well, I might not. And you had to get yourself to New York City, go to Google headquarters. If you're ever in New York City or LA and you have a chance to go to Google headquarters, go. It's incredible. It's the future. And we got the glass and, you know, but what was interesting about the experience is that we did develop an app for a metronome. We did embed the score, although you can imagine that wouldn't work, right? Because it's so small. So what was interesting is that all the ideas for research led to new ideas for research. And interestingly, the smallness of glass led me to the what we actually need is bigger. So that led to the idea of projecting the score for the students, which we did at NIB so they could see the big picture. I still think somebody needs to design a music stand that is a computer, right? A music stand that's a screen. I don't want to put an iPad on the music stand. I want somebody to design it. It's out there. They just don't want to release it. Anyway, I got really into technology, still am. And technology, I don't think, is anything to fear. I mean, from the moment we picked up a rock, right, we could either build something or hurt somebody. And it's the same with technology today. So, and as you know, Alex is right into it. And you also turned it around for Tim Saltzman.
Yeah.
And his group.
That's right.
During the pandemic.
Yeah. Just briefly, for those of you who are educators and dealing with, you know, instrumentalists, when the pandemic hit, it first hit in Washington State, the shutdowns, because that's just outside of Seattle is where we had the first nursing home deaths. It was scary. And so this is mid-March and of 20. And everything runs together time-wise. I can't figure out what year it is. And I got a call from another very distinguished and respected band director who I did not know other than reputation. Tim and I had never worked together. Timothy Salzman is the director of bands at University of Washington.
Fabulous.
And, yeah, he's terrific. And he they've got a big program there. And he has a whole bunch of orchestra and band students there. He called me up. He knew my reputation as a kind of tech-oriented person, an online composer. And he said, hi, and you know, I'm looking to do something. I know I want to keep all these students I've got suddenly playing their instruments, connected to each other. And somehow, he said, composing must be in there, I think, somehow. But I'm not sure how, so I thought I'd ask you. So we spoke on the phone for a while and brainstormed a few things. I came up just with a few random ideas. I am not an educator. I feel like I play one on Zoom, so to speak, because I'm constantly Zooming in and getting the chance to talk with literally thousands of young musicians. And it thrills me to no end to have that opportunity to talk to them on a very regular basis. But I'm not on faculty anywhere. I've never designed a curriculum, but I just thought about, we hung up the phone, it was in the evening, and I thought about what this could look like over Zoom. What would it be? We already knew that we don't have synchronous audio, right, over the internet. So playing together, not an option. I wasn't going to go near that. But I figured there are many other things we can do collaboratively, and certainly one of them is recording yourself playing something, uploading file of what you've done, sharing that with maybe some sound team members, if you break your large ensemble up into groups of six or seven people, and they work together, they each work with and they download, let's say, those six or seven motifs, and then they all short little 15-second pieces of original music that they're asked to write and record on their primary instrument. Or they can use another instrument if they want, but their primary instrument. And then the fun begins. They dump those into digital audio workstations, DAWs, like Audacity or GarageBand. If they're doing it online, you can use, you know, BandLab or Soundtrap. And multi-track, every motive gets its own track, and away they go. They start mixing, matching, doing all kinds of things with these motives and composing. And it works so well. I wrote up a 5-page or so syllabus with some lesson plans, thinking, well, maybe he'll just choose one or two things out of this. He ended up doing the entire thing. We worked it more together. I was consulting with it. And then over the year, I ended up consulting with about 30 universities and some high schools on this too. So for those of you who are looking at alternative things to do, not just under pandemic distanced circumstances, but to add to your teaching, to your interactions with students, this really works. So that was an example of bringing music and technology together for good, not for evil. It was just wonderful. And Timothy Salzman and all of his graduate conducting students there were fabulous overseeing.
So I'm gonna beg to differ with Alex and say you are an educator. It's pretty amazing, right? Pretty amazing educator. One of the things that's really been bugging me for a long time about what we do and how we do it is that we silo ourselves into these categories. And the other thing that was a result of what Alex did, and we also did it, Steve Danu, who's another person who, quote unquote, pivoted really quickly and created a project for musicians. One of the things I wanted to do during that time where we couldn't be together in person was to have every music education major, performance major, whether they're DMA in performance or undergrad in music ed, therapy, whatever, to say at the end of the semester, I am a composer.
Yes.
And I think one of the things that we do really awfully poorly in conservatories and music schools and in our profession is silo ourselves into categories of conductor, music ed, therapy, composer, theorist, musicologist. And I really think that's very harmful to how we really need to start thinking about the new normal and the new reality, particularly for you looking, who are going to be looking for jobs very shortly, if not already. You have to de-silo yourself. And music schools are not doing it. They're, by the time they do it, you're already going to be employed for a few years. But as a dean, I'm going to do it. But anyway, you just made me want to riff on that because I think it's so extremely important that we start to think of each other as musicians, period, right? And the musician teaches, performs, knows about technology.
That's right. Absolutely.
Whatever.
I'm going to use that to pivot us a little more into education, which will lead us to suspended, interestingly, which is not what I would consider an educational piece of music. but I mean, I guess it is in some ways, depending on how to use it. But during the time I was writing this grade 5 piece, right, this is a challenging piece. This was written for whatever I wanted to do, I was going to do it. At the exact same time, I had the opportunity to write my very first grade 0.5. piece for absolute beginners who literally have just figured out which end of the damn instrument through which to blow. I mean, literally, what is this? I had always wanted to do this. Some of you know I have written some middle school pieces and certainly some high school level pieces. I've kind of written at all the grade levels, but I had never written for beginners and I had always wanted to try this. And I have a big pet peeve, big pet peeve for years, which is that by the time you're 3 and a half, you can count to 10. Right? Why is it that it is not until some students are about 17 years old that they're given a 5-4 or a 7-4 measure to play? That is criminal. That's just stupid, right? It just drives me nuts. As a composer, as a living composer, who gets to play with all the meters all the time, as you heard last night, there were a lot of meter changes.
All the meters.
And I'm thinking, you have somebody who has only played inside the box, kind of metered music until suddenly something is put on their music stand at a more advanced stage and there's been no middle ground there. And then they're struggling to just kind of figure this out. This makes no sense at all. I titled my little piece, Count to 10. And it is literally that. I'm writing between 1-4 and 9-4. And I don't subdivide the 9-4 the way I would for actually a real band because I don't think that's the best meter. I would break it up. But for these kids, absolutely. Get them to count to 9. And the title is, if you can count to 10, you can count to 9, right? And it worked really, it's working really well. And that's something I've been screaming from the rafters to my people, to my colleagues, my composer colleagues, is that it is really important that every good composer who is writing at the top of their game at a top level has to be writing for kids as well, for the beginners.
Here, here.
And if you don't do that, you're just making a huge mistake because think of it as self-preservation if you're a composer. You're writing your own primer because it's these kids who are then going to play Paper Cut, which has a 6-4 bar in it. Then they're going to play Tight Squeeze. Then they're going to play, Moment. Then they're going to play Suspended, as they get better and better. This is how you prepare them for real life and real music. because this is how composers are writing them. And it's an electroacoustic piece, if, you know, the track is optional in this case, but it's a way of them learning the tools right away of their own times, right? So anyway, you can tell we're both passionate about
this. Yeah, I mean, I thought you were the other pet peeve, is that
I have so many.
Yeah, there's a lot of peeves, that the perception that a composition is good if it's difficult.
Yes, that is right? Where I was going to
go. Some people's definition of quality, and don't get me started on that, is that it's difficult to play, or it's rhythmically complicated, or, you know, which is just garbage, right?
When you were talking about siloing, that's exactly what you read my mind, because the siloing in our industry between the virtuosic composers who write the very important stuff, you know, and then the educational composers who write the pablum, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right?
Michael Colgrass said the hardest piece he ever wrote was Old Churches, which is what? Grade three.
Help me.
Grade three.
Yeah. Yeah. It was written for Band Quester, which was my second band whose paper cut.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And for all of you, spread this message because you are all so powerful. Each one of you has a very powerful voice in our field. You know, you're dealing with a lot of people yourselves. If you can kind of spread this gospel and start help us, you know, get this trend really going of a cross-pollination of an unsiloing of all of the things we're talking about, this makes for a very happy and productive music life, you know, for everybody. So, yeah, and so that brings us to suspended, because to be doing both at once, it was quite wonderful because, as you can imagine, especially after that first movement, my brain kind of needed a little bit of a break. You know, I knew what I was going to do with this piece, and it was so fun to, like, do really, really rageful and angry and loud, and then do count to 10, you know, it was just really fun. And this is, it's so good for your mental health to do a lot of different things and do them simultaneously. This piece was, I said to you, I was so excited to have Dr. Turner be assigned to be the conductor for it, because I just had a sense how we were going to click so well, and boy, did we, in our styles, the way we talk to people, the way we, you know, approach problems, the way we, you know, put something together. It was very challenging to put together. It would be very challenging to put this piece together if you had monthly rehearsals. Imagine 2.5 days. And, you know, that was quite a lot to manage. In addition to Omar's piece.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
In addition to Omar's piece and the Offenbach, which I thought they played all of that just beautifully. And so let's talk about the process. What goes through your mind when you are faced with 26 minutes of music, four very different movements, very different styles and necessities musically to bring out in these students who are at varying levels of, you know, in their own playing abilities, right? It's not across the board. And what's your approach to taking on a big
project? Can I tell the truth?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, when
drink heavily?
Drink heavily, no, sorry. That's bad advice. Truthfully, when I heard it was you, it was like, oh, this is gonna be great. There's gonna be tech, that's wonderful, it's fabulous. But then I don't know how you had said it, or Tony said it, it's a piece about the pandemic, or it has the theme of the pandemic. And my first reaction was, oh, really?
Yeah, haven't we had enough of this?
I'm over it.
Right.
And then we had a conversation. You sent me a lengthy email or something.
I can't remember. She writes one-sentence emails with great efficiency and information packed in. I write tomes. Can you tell?
There was
tomes.
Anyway, I was, okay, this is going to be cool. This is going to be cathartic. This is going to be actually healing. This is, you know, and anyway, I just wanted to put it out there that sometimes the reaction when you hear about something is like, oh, I don't know. And then it's just a 360. The process when you get a new score, I mean, it's, how did I do it? I mean, you send it in this particular case, which would not be the case of a new score I was looking at, but maybe it was already in existence, or I wasn't getting movement by movement. But I made a conscious choice not to listen to the MIDI. That's a cliche thing to say, but I really try to look at the score and see what I can hear in my head before I listen to the MIDI. But it actually, in your particular case, that's what I did for the first movement, because there is no electronics, as you know. The second movement, when I received it, maybe pass around the score. I looked at it and went, what is this? You know,
these dense chords.
And I started to analyze the chords because that's, I like that. You know, it's sort of a cursory look at the whole thing, and then I go back and started to dig in, and dig in farther, dig in farther, dig in farther. I started to analyze the chord. I got to like the fifth chord and went, forget it. I mean, you know, B flat minor sus 4 sharp 13.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, it just got ridiculous. And then I had to listen to the MIDI because I was looking at it going, well, that's a nice moment, but boy, it took us a while to get there. And then when I heard it with the MIDI, I went, oh my God, this is going to be cool. So it was really, it was movement by movement, and each movement had the first one is Scream With Me. And I kind of liked that. Well, that's a screamer piece, you know, and then the second one was Cry With Me. So you knew right away what the sound world and emotional world was going to be, and I put myself there. And the third piece is Laugh With Me, which I actually did. As soon as I heard the track of her laughing,
it's yes.
and then Dance With Me. So, I mean, it was just, it was unusual to get movement by movement over the course of
A few months.
Well,
I gave you the first two movements, I think, in January, and then it took me a while longer to roll out Mast and Viral. You got Viral, I think, in April or maybe even early May.
At the same time, I was changing jobs, so it was a busy time.
And moving.
But the process is different for every sport. Score.
I mean, I was really impressed with the amount of digging in and studying of the score, this new score. And interestingly, and this surprised me too, I was expecting more questions, more maybe let's do a Zoom, let's talk about this, whatever. This woman had it under control. She knew, well, you fake it well, you know, she knew what this was. She understood it. I do think my program note did help in terms of setting the stage. And all of you, you know, it's in the program and it's on the website. And to the way she dug in and just prepared it to understand what these lines are, what the density, what the issues might be, there's a lot of syncopation. Putting Mast together, that was the hardest movement to put together. Everything's on the offbeat, right? It's just this demonic little clown, like demented clown kind of music, right? And everything's off kilter. But when you get into the groove, it's actually kind of, I kept using the word, it's an old fashioned word, swanky. It was just kind of swanky. But you have to be in the pocket to get the swank. And so that was hard to feel, to feel. And especially across the stage with a lot of people, like all of us, who haven't even had a chance to play as an ensemble together for many, many months, right? This is a whole nother skill set that used to be part of our DNA immediately. And now we're having to kind of learn it again, in a sense, how to listen to each other, how to hear stuff. So for Dr. Turner to understand where the little minefields are going to be, because most composers, if they're doing something interesting, it's going to be something that's tricky and not always the easiest thing at first. Sometimes the composer doesn't even realize what that is. Sometimes we might think, oh, this is going to be the hard thing. That thing turns out to be much easier. And then the things you didn't think were going to be such a problem end up taking, much more time. For instance, I thought the first movement would be much harder for them than it turned out to be. Go figure. And in fact, when I asked Dr. Turner, I put it at 160, which is pretty bad out of hell, right? And I said, is that going to be okay? And she said, oh, hey, 160, I'm going to take it faster. I said, wow, okay, great.
And you did.
And you did. Yeah. So thank you. Those of you in the audience who were in the band, thank you.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed the percussion had click tracks as well. I don't know if you were aware of that.
We tried without, and then it just became so much easier. And this would be across the board with any electroacoustic piece. It's always ideal if you can have in-ear monitors with the click for anybody who's got a tight rhythmic thing going on. It's usually the percussionist, the pianist.
Can you talk more about the click track and what the audience hears versus what the monitors produce versus what is in your ear?
Yeah, I mean, two things. Frankly, conducting with a click track, which I've done a fair amount with new music, with the new music groups, I've done a fair amount of click track conducting. It's on one level, the easiest conducting you'll do because it's just there. And on another level, it's kind of multi-sensory. We all multitask, but multi-sensory is a whole other thing. And it's a skill I had to relearn because I haven't been doing any conducting for a year and a half either, the better part of 2 years. And I haven't done any click track conducting in, I'm going to say, about 4.5 years. You have to relearn the skill of listening to the ensemble, and in this case, listening to the ambient, and also focusing in on the click track. It's what we do as conductors is multitasking anyway, right? You're in the moment, you're ahead of the moment, you're behind the moment, because that was a mistake that you need to stop and go back and fix, but don't stop for one thing. So, and you're also experiencing the big picture. So this is a skill that you just develop. And so with the click track, I'm going to say this, and you might not like it.
Go for it.
In the second movement, which I found to be deeply emotional, like I had a hard time keeping it in, I did not enjoy the click track. Because there's a moment in that piece, or two moments in that piece, where I wanted you to wait for it. And I really want, and when we rehearsed it without the click track, we pulled back a lot, and we sort of like, it's to me, it's like an archer.
Right.
And then, okay, where we go. And I couldn't do it with the click track.
Right.
I wanted to talk to you about
I'm going to interject and just say one thing. Everybody who's dealing with a living composer, including you, Missy, you can always ask if you're still in production with stuff, if the composer's still mixing the track or putting it together, never hesitate to ask the composer, you know what? I am feeling more rubato here. I am feeling this. I am feeling that. Would you, can you alter the track to give me more time? Because, we could have had that conversation. And I agree with you because the whole time I was putting it together, I was trying to anticipate ring out things. Where did I want it expansive and where? And I didn't know quite on the very big moments how much time we'd really want. I'm sure we will want more. And so we'll end up remixing some of that, I'm sure. But you can do that. I never want anybody to feel shy about contacting a living composer. The dead ones never email you back. They're a drag. Okay? They're rude. But we really do. And most of us are really nice people. We love to hear the feedback. And when we're collaborating on a new piece, that's the time. That's when you can put your imprint as a musician to help the composer make it shine. We value the input. So, and that without question, I know that I was going to say this to you. I know we want to rework some of
the times. Well, and that's the other thing about bringing a new piece to life too, is that you're going to change some things and add some things and take some things away.
That's right. Even in rehearsal, I was adding a few instrument doublings here and there or whatever, it's what you do.
I hope you've enjoyed the conversation so far. This session lasted for about an hour and a half, so I'm dividing it into three separate episodes. This is part one. Thank you to everyone who joined us today. Hello, future people. Tune back in next week for part two of this conversation between the conductor and composer of the NIB commissioned piece from NatCon 2021. If you have any suggestions, comments, or questions, you can send those to me at smity@kksci.org. That is smity@kksci.org. Have a wonderful day, and as always, AEA.